when I think about decentralized finance and like what we're trying to achieve, right? We can't just kind of like iterate in our like small world. Like we have to like kind of innovate and push beyond it. I'm extremely bullish AMMs as like a market structure, but I think that there are also other market structures that like could, you know, exist in the future. And then I think we also want to discover them and have them be part of the Uniswap ecosystem.
Bienvenue à Bankless. Bankless Nation, it is that time of year again. ETHCC, the Ethereum Community Conference in Paris, France. All the teams, all the projects, all the protocols save some of their biggest announcements for ETHCC, except for the ones saving it for permissionless, of course. You might remember last year, ETHCC was marked by the time in which three teams all had the first ZK EVM. Yeah, that was a year ago at ETHCC. And today, the day I'm recording this, Sunday, the day before ETHCC begins, we already have a massive release out of Uniswap Labs, a brand new protocol called Uniswap X, a new half of Uniswap that complements the rest of the Uniswap protocol, the yin to the yang of Uniswap's V1 through 4. Something brand new that fills in the picture of the Uniswap project. Seriously, the best way to describe this is that it's the other half of Uniswap. It's the half of Uniswap that is meant to make Uniswap the best place for swappers to swap tokens. Today on the show, we have Hayden Adams, the day before he gives his ETHCC main stage talk, releasing Uniswap X into the wild. What is Uniswap X? I'm glad you asked. Uniswap X is a protocol for competitive order execution in DeFi. It's a protocol that exists on top of Uniswap's 1 through 4, as well as all the other liquidity sources in DeFi, that ensures that the market produces the best possible order execution for anyone looking to swap tokens using Uniswap X. The idea behind Uniswap X is that it maximally protects swappers ahead of MEV extractors, ahead of arbitragers, ahead of front runners, to ensure that the average Joe, who just wants to swap some tokens, gets the best possible deal that the market will allow for. In this episode with Hayden, we go under the hood of Uniswap X, what it is, how it works, and why it's needed. So you'll learn about Uniswap X and how it uses a Dutch auction to maximize swapper returns, how this Dutch auction mechanism also ensures that MEV is maximally retained by swappers. Also, how Uniswap X massively reduces bridge risk and almost entirely abstracts away bridging altogether, freeing up capital to not have to be stuck inside of bridges where it's vulnerable. And also how Uniswap X formalizes a new kind of player in the game of making trading in DeFi maximally efficient. As a disclosure, of course, Uniswap is a sponsor of Bankless, and Bankless also does hold some UNI tokens, which you can see all the details of, as well as all of our other disclosures at bankless.com/disclosures. So let's go and get talking to Hayden Adams all about this new Uniswap X protocol. But first, we're going to talk about our preferred centralized exchange for crypto in 2023, Kraken, because you got to get your fiat boomer bucks into the world of crypto somehow. So use Kraken, again, our preferred exchange in 2023. If you do not have an account with Kraken, consider clicking the link in the show notes to sign up with one today. Kraken Pro has easily become the best crypto trading platform in the industry. The place I use to check the charts and the crypto prices, even when I'm not looking to place a trade. On Kraken Pro, you'll have access to advanced charting tools, real-time market data, and lightning-fast trade execution, all inside their spiffy new modular interface. Kraken's new customizable modular layout lets you tailor your trading experience to suit your needs. Pick and choose your favorite modules and place them anywhere you want in your screen. With Kraken Pro, you have that power. Whether you are a seasoned pro or just starting out, join thousands of traders who trust Kraken Pro for their crypto trading needs. Visit pro.kraken.com to get started today. Introducing Polygon 2.0, the value layer for the internet. For too long, the limitations of blockchains have held back app development and stifled user adoption. The internet allows anyone to create and exchange information. What's missing is a value layer that lets anyone exchange, store, and program value. That's where Polygon 2.0 comes in. Polygon Labs has unveiled a series of innovations that will radically alter the Polygon ecosystem and Web3 as a whole. By leveraging groundbreaking ZK innovations, such as Polygon ZK EVM, the next iteration of the best in-class Plonky 2 proving system, and a first-of-its-kind ZK-powered interoperability layer, Polygon 2.0 will give users and devs unlimited scalability and unified liquidity. Right now, there is a Polygon improvement proposal regarding a potential ZK-powered upgrade of Polygon Proof-of-Stake. If approved, Polygon Proof-of-Stake would become a Layer 2 ZK EVM Validium. So make your voice heard on this proposal by joining the Polygon Discord today. You have a chance to help the Polygon community give the internet the value layer it deserves. Bonjour, Bankless Nation. It is the Sunday before ETHCC, and I'm here with Hayden Adams, who has yet another announcement out of the Uniswap ecosystem. Hayden, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Bonjour. Great to be here. First time in Paris, and first time at ECC. But yeah, you know, Uniswap, we are keep cranking out the hits. You know, been pretty busy, hard at work. And, you know, most recently we announced Uniswap V4, which is new version of the Uniswap protocol. And, you know, currently being built in public. And it, you know, basically makes it easier for, you know, people to create customized liquidity pools. We talked about this last time, hooks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what you start to see is there's this thing called the routing problem. And, you know, as AMMs, you know, get more flexible and basically what happens is routing gets harder over time. And routing was already actually pretty hard. So today we have hundreds of thousands of tokens. We have four versions of the protocol. We have multiple chains. We have, you know, other liquidity sources. Mm-hmm. And then you also start to think about things like MEV and, you know, trade-offs between slippage and latency and, you know, best execution. And it starts to get really complicated. And definitely, the you know, with Uniswap V4 and hooks, it actually gets even, you know, one step more complicated.
Right.
And, you know, traditionally to date, we have our current, like, open source, we call it the auto router, which optimizes routing across Uniswap V4, V3, V2. And, you know, what we've been working on today, I guess a long build-up, is what we call Uniswap X, which is a Dutch auction-based protocol for routing and aggregating liquidity. And, you know, we think it's really powerful, and we think it will help provide it. It basically, you know, one, you know, improves prices, but also has a bunch of UX benefits, allows for gas-free trading, you know, no slippage on failed transactions. It starts to internalize, you know, some MEV, and provides a bunch of other cool features. I don't know. Maybe I don't know if I say the other big one.
We'll get to every single bit here. And for the Bankless listeners out there that aren't familiar, ETHCC is the place where you announce things. It's where announcements comes to be. And like I said, this is the Sunday before. So we're going to be seeing a slew of announcements coming out. And we're getting the first one here with Uniswap X, which is this new thing. This is the thing that Uniswap is announcing, this thing called Uniswap X. But I want to actually set more of the stage. And you did a good job. But I want to make sure that we are talking about the problem being addressed here. Yep. Uniswap is cool because every single token gets its own exchange. It gets its own pool. Same thing with Uniswap V2. V3 made it even more complex, if you will, with this concentrated liquidity. And then when we had you on not too long ago, like 4 weeks ago or something, about Uniswap V4, that whole thing, Uniswap V4, was even more expressivity in Uniswap pools, more complexity. And the big takeaway, I called it Uniswap's hook-centric roadmap to go in parallel with Ethereum's roll-up-centric roadmap, where Ethereum's doing this thing where it's pushing complexity to the edges. It's like, hey, roll-ups, you do all the execution stuff, and we will just settle. And Uniswap's kind of doing something similar with its hooks in Uniswap V4. It's, hey, there's a world of expressivity and features and different ways of constructing a pool that we want to enable Uniswap pool builders, AMMs, to be able to build. And what I think you're leading up to is, like, that's all the great. We have as much expressivity as we need in Uniswap pools, except we're still left with a bunch of complexity. Even though it's been pushed to the margins and Uniswap as a base is simple, the complexity still exists. There's so many pools. Now pools are different. There are different standards of pools. And so Uniswap X is a solution to harness all of that complexity, would you say?
Yeah, and I'd say also, you know, when I was on last time, we talked about different ways of achieving decentralization. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's, like, the most pure form of decentralization is, like, automation. And you should automate what you can automate, and with immutable smart contracts. And then the next level of achieving decentralization, and we talk about this more in the lens of governance, but the next level is just, like, incentivization and markets. And if you have, like, a competitive market structure where people are incentivized to do what they should do, then that's, like, more decentralized than something that needs to be governed, which is, like, the third tier. And for that, you achieve that through just, like, greater distribution of governance rights.
Right.
And so what we're talking about here is taking, you know, the routing. Like, we've already talked about this in the context of the protocol, which is highly, highly decentralized. And what we're trying to do is, you know, do that for the routing problem, which is, you know, you could, people tend to think about, like, AMMs as, you know, both like routing, like both swapping and routing, as well as liquidity provision, all, you know, bundled together.
Routing, swapping, and liquidity provision. Well, yeah, three different things.
Yeah. Swapping, you know, how do you route the swaps through liquidity? But people think of it as like, okay, you have the AMM and you try to find the best price through it. But I think, you can start to unbundle them a bit, right? Because like, you know, today most interfaces have like different strategies for how they route through pools, right? And, you know, there's various aggregators and they're trying to like, you know, find every possible liquidity source. There's the Uniswap UI, which today basically just like has like, you know, tries to discover across Uniswap pools. And, you know, what we're trying to do here with Uniswap X is create a competitive marketplace for routing. Right? You know, it's almost a way of like decentralizing, you know, achieving more efficiency through decentralization. Right? Like the more people that can participate in finding the best routes, discovering the best routes, discovering the best pools, you know, the better discovering all the different liquidity, you know, the better prices you can get in the long run if you can create a competitive marketplace. And so what we're trying to do with Uniswap X is create a competitive marketplace for, you know, routing across liquidity. And that liquidity can be on-chain, it can be off-chain. But yeah, that's essentially what we're trying to do here.
Creating a competitive marketplace for routing. So with this explosion, like Uniswap, even at, you know, its earliest days in V1, was an explosion of pools. The cool thing about Uniswap is you can list any token. And that only got furthered with Uniswap V2, V3, and V4. Now we have pools all over the place. And so the routing problem, maybe to define the routing problem, is that with all of these pools and all these different sources of liquidity, getting the best price for your trade is a computational problem because there's so many pools out there. And so what I think what you're trying to do with Uniswap X, a marketplace for competitive order routing, is you're just giving that up to the market and saying, hey, market, instead of this one, instead of the Uniswap router being the thing that manages all of that complexity, you're just giving it up to the marketplace and allowing routers to come in and service that role to make sure that traders and swappers get the best liquidity, get the best offer.
Yes, and I think the thing I'd add to that is that because we're, you know, doing this on a blockchain, it starts to touch on a bunch of other problems in complexity, right? We have like, you know, like you could do this in TradFi, like you could think about it purely in TradFi terms, and it's like just like optimizing, you know, routes. But we also deal with things like gas, and then we deal with things like the fact that, you know, validators exist and they get to, you know, choose the order of transactions within a given block, right? And that starts to take us into, you know, what people call, I only found out recently that it was rebranded from minor extractable value to maximal extractable value. But then, you know, it takes you into like MEV territory, you know, gas optimizations and latency, and there's all these other things as well. Another thing is that like there's also, you know, another area of like price improvement is, you know, batching. People talk about batching all the time. Like, if people are trading in the same direction at the same time, if you just like route it through a Uniswap pool in the back of the Uniswap pool, right? Then like that's less optimal than like netting it all together. So by creating like a kind of a competitive marketplace for it, in where people are competing in an auction, it basically forces people to, you know, find the most sophisticated strategies that you know offer the most price improvement. And so sometimes it might mean like executing multiple transactions at the same time, and in that way, like, you know, you're saving some gas costs and you're also maybe internalizing some of the price improvement for swappers. But yeah, I mean, look, the real goal is to like, you know, deliver value to users at the end of the day. And so and then the other thing I'll mention is that, like, again, because we're on blockchains, there's a bunch of like UX implications of, you know, like just like gas, right? So with Uniswap X, orders are off-chain signatures that are then, you know, so you, rather than like signing transactions that are sent directly to the chain, users sign off-chain signatures that express their intent, as is a word of the moment in crypto. And that is, you know, sort of an auction of, you know, a price decaying auction. And then people are competing, you know, as soon as the price hits a point where people are willing to fill it, you know, the fillers, a new class participant, are submitting it to the chain. And those fillers look, you know, similar to the block builders of today. And, you know, likely will be a lot of the of overlap or or similar to like the trading firms and arbitragers. And because orders just start off as, you know, off-chain signatures, you also get benefits like if your transaction is going to fail, it never gets submitted. And also just like being able to abstract away gas for users. So if I want to swap, you know, USDC for DAI, I don't want to think about like ETH as an input. Right, today when you swap USDC for DAI, your ETH balance goes down a little bit. Here, you know, with Uniswap X, you just sign a message. Someone else pays the ETH, and that's reflected in the price that you get. Mm-hmm. So there's a bunch of other benefits as well. But yeah, there is the first thing you said as well.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things under the hood there that I want to unpack, like the gas, the MEV, all of that kind of stuff. But really just to start at the very, very top, how is this different, and just to make sure that we're setting the table appropriately, how is this different from like a DEX aggregator or some of the other liquidity optimizer services that are out there? Like, if we take a peek under the hood, like how should people think about this in its new form?
Yeah, I say that, like, you know, for most DEX aggregators, and for what it's worth, there is prior work and there's other like teams that are attempting to do things that like are categorically similar. Mm-hmm. But like in terms of like the traditional model for a DEX aggregator, you know, what people are doing is just like you have like a single team that is like integrating liquidity sources one by one.
Right.
And, you know, in doing that, like you're hoping to get as much liquidity coverage as possible. Mm-hmm. That was like the kind of traditional DEX aggregator. It's definitely like, you know, various experiments, you know, like Kaswap and Fusion and stuff that like get into closer territory to what we're doing with Uniswap X. But here, you know, rather than like trying to like manually find all the liquidity sources here, we're basically saying anyone can do that. Right. And they're competing against each other, right. And so it's a marketplace.
It's a little bit more meta than a DEX aggregator. So a DEX aggregator
that
is like
that was a name on the there was a Uniswap meta was one name we considered, but naming things is hard, you know. And I think meta kind of ruined
meta,
it.
Meta is now taken. That box has been checked, sadly. So a DEX aggregator provides a singular solution to getting the best liquidity. And that is their solution. And what you're saying is, in order to improve that product, the teams behind every DEX aggregator needs to serially, manually, one by one, integrate with liquidity pools, and in order to improve their product. And what you're saying is Uniswap X is not that. It is actually a place for all of those solutions to compete in the marketplace.
Yeah.
And maybe at this point, complexity around Uniswap is so large that knowing the correct way of producing the best outcome is perhaps impossible, which is why you need to leave it up to the free market.
Yeah, that's definitely it. And there's also like other liquidity sources that can start to be integrated there as well. I'd also add that like signed off-chain order-based auctions are like a really powerful primitive.
Let's dive down into that. So like the current, if I go to Uniswap, I sign a transaction, I broadcast it to Ethereum. In 12 to 24 seconds, it gets included in the blockchain. That is the current Uniswap user experience that people are used to. With Uniswap X, we have this new thing. Can you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that something that's funny is that actually every order, like you already have an auction happening every transaction, right? Because there's like an auction for block space. Mm. But people are like competing to like, you know, there's like, I'd say that like one thing that's interesting is that if you imagine there's like a price curve and then there's a gas price curve. Mm-hmm. And today, like whether or not your order gets included is based purely on the gas price curve, not the asset price curve. Mm. And so like this combines everything. Like you just have the price curve. Like the nice thing is it kind of like combines like the gas and the price into a single thing, mm-hmm. which is part of it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like users sign off-chain orders. They're broadcast, and they can be broadcast in a variety of ways. And
signing off-chain orders as opposed to signing a transaction.
Yeah. And they, you know, people have talked about these for a long time, like meta transactions or sponsored transactions. All of these, it's like a similar category of things, but we're like bundling, you know, the gas auction of getting included in a block, mm-hmm. with the price auction of trying to optimize your price at the same time. And so that, you know, there's like a nice efficiency thing there. Where sometimes, for example, in the past, and definitely things improved a lot with 1159, EIP 1159. But sometimes in the past, for example, like, you know, the gas, like your transaction would wait until like the gas dropped a significant amount to get included. But in that time, the token that you were selling also dropped. Mm. And so it would have been better for you to pay more gas sooner. But your transaction has no awareness of like there's no like, and that's where when people talk about like MEV awareness, like if the you know, if the fee that you're paying has no awareness of the transaction that you're doing, then you're like really not optimizing. Right. And so part of this is around that. There's also just like a gas, there's like a UX benefit. Like people don't like thinking about gas. Mm-hmm. You know, when I'm trading, you know, USDC for DAI, I just don't want to think about ETH.
Right.
And it's confusing. And that's something that confuses users a lot. Right. I think something that maybe makes Uniswap a little bit unique in, not totally unique, but like somewhat unique in like how we are able to develop and design things, is we just have a lot of users and we hear a lot from them. And you know, some of how we approach solving problems is we're like, okay, like what is holding us back today? Like, mm-hmm. why what are our users struggling with right now? And mm-hmm. that's part of what like led to us creating a wallet, mm-hmm. is our users were struggling with wallet UX. And you know, it's part of what led to some of our design decisions here, is it's like, you know, it's just like, how do we continue to you know, push things forward.
Mm-hmm. I want to drill down on this off-chain order thing just a little bit more, because I think it's a great microcosm for the solutions being put forth by Uniswap X as a whole to begin with. So in Uniswap in its current form, like I said, I sign a transaction, I broadcast that transaction. The gas fee that I pay is hard-coded into that transaction, and that is independent from the trade that I'm making. And so these are two different variables that are not talking to each other and can produce suboptimal results because maybe, like you said, the token moves against me in the time that I tried to save $2 of gas, I lost $15 off my trade.
Exactly.
With signing an off-chain order, which is signing a transaction but not broadcasting it and just leaving it for somebody, a filler, taker to take and fulfill that, they are allowed to combine the computation between optimizing for gas fees and optimizing for the actual swap.
Yeah.
And so they take that complexity and do that computation to produce the best outcome. And because it was left off-chain, it was assigned an off-chain order, some sort of off-chain service provider, some filler who's managing this order routing and all the other complexity, they're able to manage the complexity between the gas and the swap to produce a better outcome for a user. And that's just like one piece of many pieces of combined complexity that allows for a better swapping experience.
For sure. Something I'll add is that, like, that might be like, oh, there's an off-chain server. Like, what does that mean for decentralization? But I think it's, like, worth noting that, like, today, the way it works is there's no like magic like user signs that goes straight to the chain, right? There's like, we have like mempools, we have block builders, we have like
Infura,
we have all these things in between. And what we're trying to do is say, like, let's optimize what's in between to like, you know, optimize for the best outcomes for users. Because today, like, you know, MEV, you know, block builders aren't optimizing to give users the most money, they're optimizing to take the most money for themselves. And actually, you know, funny enough, a lot of that money is going to ETH holders through efficient MEV auctions. So actually ETH holders are making a lot of that profit, but we, you know, ultimately want to give a lot of that value back to swappers. I know we like ETH, but
Also like UX and value retention by end users.
I also mentioned that, like, you know, I mentioned like off-chain orders, like signed off-chain orders as like a general primitive. Like I think something that's like really powerful with Uniswap X is it actually opens up a world for like cross-chain swapping as well. So, you know, today we're launching it depends on when this gets.
On Monday.
Yeah, Monday, the 17th?
United States time.
July 17th, something like that. There's going to be like an opt-in beta. People can sign up or people can like opt in the UI to start having some small percentage of their orders route through this. We're starting small. We're you know, it's only for certain pairs, for certain trade sizes, etc. And it's going to, you know, so that we can continue to like give time for more fillers to come into the ecosystem and continue optimizing how we parameterize the system. But, you know, starting today, that like today we'll have like a version that's just like on mainnet on Ethereum. But in the long run, we can really make this cross-chain and you can sign orders that are, you know, this method of like signed off-chain orders is like a really powerful and expressive and allows for, you know, really good user experience and efficient cross-chain swapping as well. And so, you know, not today, but maybe like hopefully like later in this year, we'll see like cross-chain trading and that will also be really cool.
I want to try and define the landscape of what Uniswap is now because we have on-chain on Ethereum and the layer twos. We have Uniswaps 1 through 4, which are AMMs. And then now we also have Uniswap X, which is an order routing protocol. It's another protocol. And so this is a new protocol. This is not an AMM. This is actually something completely new compared to all the, you know, Uniswaps 1 through 4. This is not a Uniswap 5. This is something completely different. This is a
parallel and complementary.
Parallel and complementary. Like the pieces fit really, really well together. But I really want to kind of carve out what the definition is of Uniswap X. I'm going to do my best and you can correct me because I'm only get so far. Uniswap X is a protocol, an open-ended protocol for service providers, fillers, trade executors to come in, fulfill the best trade according to the parameters of a swapper. So a swapper comes to Uniswap X and they say, hey, I want to do something. And Uniswap X puts that into a package that fillers can all compete on. And so it's like a protocol. What do protocols do? They bundle things in easy to manage packages of information so that other service providers, fillers, swappers, liquidity providers, whatever in the Ethereum ecosystem can all come and compete on that vector of providing that one swapper the best swap possible. And this is, again, complementary with Uniswaps 1 through 4, but is a completely different protocol, correct?
Yeah. I mean, look, you could start to think of like AMMs as ways of creating liquidity, mm-hmm. Building on top of liquidity as a building block, mm-hmm. Right? There's like, on-chain integrations, and it's just a really cool, expressive, and efficient on-chain way of providing liquidity. But I'd say that like naive routing solutions through AMMs in the long term are not going to make it. Like, mm-hmm. you kind of need your routing solutions to be aware of things like MEV, aware of, kind of more expressive in user intents. And so you could think of this as like, we already have a routing layer. We already have this thing we call the auto router. We also have this thing we call client side routing. So we have in our web app today, you can actually toggle between two types of routing. I don't know if you know that, but like there's a client side, which basically turns off the API entirely and just speaks directly to the chain. And that's like maximally like provable. But then we have to make it like better for users, you kind of need to have, smarter routing. And so we have this like smart order router, auto router thing we call. And that is like a little bit faster and discovers more routes, but there's an API behind it. But it's open source, and so the goal. And I would think of this as like a protocol that lives in that domain, not as a protocol that lives in the like AMM. Right. So like we already have this the routing side of the system already exists, and we're just kind of like updating it with a new protocol. And mm-hmm. I'll also mention that like the Uniswap X does have like there's like on-chain smart contracts that settle orders. They're immutable, mm-hmm. actually open source, GPL, mm-hmm. GPL open source. And then there's you have like front ends that broadcast orders, fillers that have to like discover those broadcasted orders, and then the fillers basically can submit them directly to the smart contracts.
So I think what Uniswap X is really doing is they're enabling a new type of player in the Uniswap arena. So we have swappers already. Most people listening to this are swappers. Some people listening to this might be liquidity providers.
Yeah.
And they are providing liquidity into the AMM. So we have the AMMs, which are Uniswaps 1 through 4. We have the liquidity providers. We have the swappers, the traders who trade on Uniswap. But now Uniswap X is enabling this new type of player called a filler.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting that like they're not new. We just have a routing system that is aware of them.
Right. We're formalizing them.
We're formalizing them in a way that can put constraints on them. Because right now what they do is, you can think of them as today as like the people that do like, the most advanced trading strategies, the people that do a lot of the arbitrage, the block builders, the MEV extractors, mm-hmm. right? And what we're trying to do is like put constraints on them and take value that would go to them and give them back to the swappers. Mm-hmm. So the players exist. We're just formalizing them, and we're having them compete with each other in a way that tries to drive as much value back to swappers as possible.
Mm-hmm. So swappers, the people who trade on Uniswap just to trade tokens, meme tokens, USDC, Ether, are now going to be pointed towards Uniswap X. So to trade on Uniswap now in the future, and now with Uniswap X, means to be trading through Uniswap X, correct?
Well, first, like there is like the routing system we're going to build is like going to direct your order wherever it thinks it will get you the best price, and so especially at launch with the beta, like a lot of orders will just route through our existing routing system. Mm-hmm. I'd say that like over time, probably more volume will go through Uniswap X, but I think that over time, also most Uniswap X volume will go through Uniswap the AMM protocol.
Right. So Uniswap X, people will trade on Uniswap. They can use Uniswap X, and then Uniswap X, for as in its nascent time, we'll just say, what's most efficient? The Uniswap order router.
Yeah.
But as it develops and grows and matures, it might find a better pricing and better just sources over time.
Yeah. But for what it's worth, like that sort of already like we're already in that world, which is like today, like if you don't get best prices going through Uniswap, then people will go somewhere else. And so like there's always like other liquidity. Like I think that like the goal of the Uniswap the AMM is to have like the best liquidity and the most assets possible. And I think that Uniswap V4 is like a really really powerful way of achieving that. Mm-hmm. And I'd say that it's so funny, the one thing that's like really interesting is when I was developing Uniswap V1 way back in the day, there was like the framing, the mental framework was like, do AMMs have a place in this world? Mm-hmm. The frame wasn't like, was like, I'm going to build the best AMM that's going to take over all the liquidity. It was like this is like a new way to do like liquidity creation. And like, I wonder if it will like work and like have a place in the world. And I think we saw that it does. And it's like a really efficient, cool way of creating liquidity and unlock some really powerful new things. Like the ability for anyone to create, liquidity at like sort of any, like it's sort of, anyone can create liquidity. Not anyone can create liquidity as efficiently or effectively as Citadel, but anyone can do it at some level, right? And that's why a lot of the earliest, pools that were big on Uniswap were like these like longer tail pools that were struggling to get exchange listings, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And you know, like MKR and DAI were like very big in the early days because they were like it was like the only place to trade them. And so like AMMs are like have these like new unlocks. They're like, oh, like anyone can provide liquidity. It also has like on-chain integrations, which are like a really like money Legos. It's like a really big unlock. I think that like, you know, in the like when I think about decentralized finance and like what we're trying to achieve, right? Like we can't just kind of like iterate in our like small world. Like we have to like kind of innovate and push beyond it. Mm-hmm. And I'd say that like I think that like AMMs are like a can be like, you know, I'm extremely bullish AMMs as like a market structure, but I think that there are also other market structures that like mm-hmm. could, you know, exist in the future. And then I think we also want to discover them and have them be part of the Uniswap ecosystem,
right.
And have them be like complementary. And so like you could think of this as like, oh, some, you know, some volume might go, you know, elsewhere, but like that volume might go elsewhere anyway, because if right. Uniswap isn't offering the best prices.
Right.
And so I'd say that like, you know, other liquidity sources are going to exist whether or not we you know, are aware of them and look for them. And so, you know, also worth mentioning that like today, you know, Uniswap has like a pretty like it's the funny thing is that we've actually seen this play out in aggregators. Like Uniswap still is like the largest liquidity source for every aggregator that's out there, even though they all have like private market makers, other mm-hmm. liquidity sources. And I think that like the sort of network effects that can build up around V4 will also be like really helpful.
So what you're saying with all of that is that Uniswap X is not a Uniswap maximalist protocol.
Well, it has the word Uniswap. I'd say that like it is a
it's not a Uniswap.
I'd say that like I don't want to go that far. Like I'm pretty AMM maxi in many ways, but I'd say that like it's like expressive and starts to push the Uniswap ecosystem to go beyond strictly AMMs.
Right.
But I'd say that like it still is like also the best way to route across AMMs, which is I think really important. Like you could like for anything that is like lost to other liquidity sources, there's like also gains I think in like routing efficiency, and also really importantly when you start to think around like you know when we jump back to like that hooks problem, mm-hmm. like one of the biggest questions that we got after the sort of announcement of our vision for Uniswap V4 was like, okay, I'm a team. I create a hook. And how do I make sure that people like, you know, front end, like one of the nice things about Uniswap is if I create a pool, I know that like routing is going to be discovered in like routing engines. Like if I create a new hook that has some new, like, you know, like let's say it has like TWAM in it. TWAM, if you're routing through a TWAM pool, you need to be aware of like the TWAM component because that affects the price you get. And you can't just look at the liquidity. Or if I create some other custom hook, like how do I know that my, you know, maybe people are afraid that it will like, you know, it's not safe and they have to audit it and they take some time to audit and they don't care about me. And so like, how does my liquidity get discovered? Mm-hmm. And this is like the solution to that, right? It's like if someone creates a new custom pool, a new custom hook, you know, rather than needing like Uniswap Labs team to audit their hook and integrate it into our front end, mm-hmm. you know, which is like, you know, it's not the ideal process, right? And like, let's say, like, maybe we're going to be in a world where there's a million hooks.
Right.
Or a million, like right now we already have hundreds of thousands of pools. We're going to be in a world that has, like, millions, probably eventually hundreds of millions of pools. Mm-hmm. And you can't, like, have a single kind of team just does routing. And so, like, you can think of this as, like, now all you need is to find one filler who's willing to integrate your hook. And then that hook is like represented in the liquidity that you find in front ends, like your Uniswap front end. So when you know, when you go, so someone can like not only create their liquidity pool on Uniswap, they can like, you know, find one of any filler in the world or create that's willing to like, you know, include that hook, and then you know from day, you know, immediately that liquidity is represented in the Uniswap UI. And so I think that like you could think of it as like adversarial, but I kind of think of it as like almost like strictly required to like make it work in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I'm pretty excited.
MetaMask has something new. Introducing MetaMask Portfolio. MetaMask Portfolio is the best way to view your crypto portfolio from a holistic level. See everything across all the chains all at once. In your portfolio, MetaMask will report the aggregate value of all the assets in your MetaMask wallets and even the other wallets you import too. But MetaMask Portfolio isn't just a passive portfolio viewer. It is a place to do all of the money verbs that make DeFi so powerful. You can buy, swap, bridge, and stake your crypto assets. So not only is MetaMask the easiest place to see your wallets in aggregate, but it's also a powerful battle station for all of your DeFi moves. So go check out your MetaMask portfolio because it's waiting for you to open it up. Check it out at portfolio.metamask.io.
Arbitrum is accelerating the Web3 landscape with a suite of secure Ethereum scaling solutions. Hundreds of projects have already deployed onto Arbitrum One. With a flourishing DeFi and NFT ecosystem, Arbitrum Nova is quickly becoming a Web3 gaming hub, and social dApps like Reddit are also calling Arbitrum home. And now, Arbitrum Orbit allows you to use Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Layer 3, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum and provide a builder experience that's intuitive, familiar, and fully EVM compatible. Faster transaction speeds and significantly lower gas fees. Are you a dev but you don't know Solidity? With Stylus, Arbitrum's upcoming proposal for a programming environment upgrade, developers can write smart contracts in Rust, C, C++, and many more coding languages. Arbitrum empowers you to explore and build without compromise. Visit arbitrum.io, where you can join the community, dive into the developer docs, bridge your assets, and start building your first app on Arbitrum. Mantle, formerly known as BitDAO, is the first DAO-led Web3 ecosystem, all built on top of Mantle's first core product, the Mantle Network, a brand new high-performance Ethereum Layer 2 built using the OP stack, but uses EigenLayer's data availability solution instead of the expensive Ethereum Layer 1. Not only does this reduce Mantle Network's gas fees by 80%, but it also reduces gas fee volatility, providing a more stable foundation for Mantle's applications. The Mantle Treasury is one of the biggest DAO-owned treasuries, which is seeding an ecosystem of projects from all around the Web3 space for Mantle. Mantle already has sub-communities from around Web3 onboarded, like Game7 for Web3 gaming, and Bybit for TVL and liquidity and on-ramps. So if you want to build on the Mantle network, Mantle is offering a grants program that provides milestone-based funding to promising projects that help expand, secure, and decentralize Mantle. If you want to get started working with the first DAO-led Layer 2 ecosystem, check out Mantle at mantle.xyz and follow them on Twitter at 0xmantle.
I think this is just overall a really good, elegant lesson as to how markets harness complexity really, really well. There'd be no way where one single player could manage all of this complexity with all these different pools in versus the competition of just like how just like, oh, this is too complex, just deal, make the market deal with it. I want to run through how Uniswap X actually works. I mean, we've talked a lot about the contours of it, but maybe we can run through the life cycle of a transaction and how Uniswap X actually ensures that that transaction gets the best actual output of whatever it's trying to do possible. So like, maybe you can run us through Uniswap X under the hood.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess we can start with like the Uniswap front end. For swappers in the Uniswap front end, it actually looks and feels very, very similar.
Okay.
You know,
no new skills are required here.
No new skills. Hopefully, fewer skills in the long run. But you know, when you go to you know, you choose the tokens you want to trade. You like kind of like, you know, you click like swap. The first difference is actually that you'll see that there's no gas for your swap. Mm-hmm. There is still, I'll caveat that like there is still like one initial approve per token of like the permit contract. Right. We created these permit contracts that you've probably seen that are like basically allow any signature to do signature. Any token that you approve on this contract can now do signature based approvals forever for you. Mm. So that's like what permit is. And this is building on top of that. So you do have to do an approve transaction every once in a while for new tokens that you haven't traded. And that does cost gas. And there's no way to avoid that unless the token itself includes gasless signatures or you're using a smart contract wallet. But for tokens that do have, you know, signature-based approvals eventually, but anyway, like once we have our token approvals, which is our, you know, from that point on, right, you make a swap, and instead of paying gas, and instead of you know, signing a transaction, you know, if you're using MetaMask, it looks a little different. Uniswap wallet looks than a regular transaction. It just says, you know, you're trying to sign you're just like signing a signature. Mm-hmm. So you sign a signature, and then at that moment, it feels very similar. You know, it then goes to a pending transaction state for the user. One noticeable difference is that when you sign a transaction, you can immediately go to Etherscan and start like waiting for it. Here, it's just an off-chain signature. So the order hasn't been executed. We don't know what the transaction hash will be yet.
Right.
At this point,
it's not even in the mempool.
Yeah.
It's in the pre-mempool.
Yeah. At this point, the order is broadcast to like a network of fillers from the front end. And there's like a kind of like a, yeah. There's an API for that. And then, you know, it's similar to like our auto routers. There's an API. And so the order is broadcast to a network of fillers. And I'm going to start with the base case and then mention that there's like an optimal, there's an additional like ability to parameterize through RFQ. But just like the base case of a GUDA order is you sign an off-chain order, it's broadcast, your order is basically like a decaying price auction. Mm-hmm. So like at the moment you sign it, you're like willing to accept 100, like one price, and then like the price goes down a little bit over time.
Mm-hmm.
And
what until that gets filled.
Yeah, and so you start at like, you know, maybe it starts at a little bit above the price you expect, right. And then it decays over time.
Right.
And what that does is, you know, it the moment that it's worth it for someone to fill, they will. And so that's like what creates a competition.
Right. And that's what, in theory, produces the best possible outcome because
yes.
So long as somebody is some rational actor is saying, hey, that's profitable, I'll do that, you'll get the first profitable actor that'll do that.
Yeah, the first, you know, the person who's willing to take the lowest margin or has like the best strategy. And they're competing against other people, and they want to make sure they get it, so they try to give the best price. Mm-hmm. Then at that moment, the filler, not you, submits the transaction, meaning they're paying the gas.
Mm-hmm.
And then what that does is it pulls your tokens out of your wallet. You know, you've approved it. You know, and there's a smart contract that you fill through, and it enforces that they can only take the tokens out of your wallet if they send you the required amount of tokens based on the moment at which it executes, right? Because there's like a timestamp component. And that's about it, right? You sign an order, a filler, you know, the first filler that's willing to fill it takes it and submits it on chain and pays the gas, and that does the transaction.
Mm-hmm.
I think that something that you know starts to happen here is as you think about like latency.
Mm-hmm.
So back in the day, pre-1159, Uniswap transactions used to take like a few minutes sometimes. People were like, the gas markets weren't very good or very efficient.
Right.
Today it's a little bit faster. About 75% of Uniswap trades execute in the first block. After they sign it, and about 90% in the second block by the end of the second block, so I think that there's like definitely a need for the auctions to happen very quickly,
mm-hmm.
There's an optional component for the system, optional at a smart contract level, right? UIs can do whatever, but that allows you to like layer an RFQ on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Which basically means you use an RFQ system, right? Request for quote, they're called, where you ask a bunch of people, what is the best price you'll give me? And you use that to inform what the actual market price is rather than like guessing when you're parameterizing the auction.
Mm-hmm.
To incentivize people to like give you their best quotes, you do have to like, give them something sort of in return. And so the way that looks in the smart contracts is if you use the optional RFQ parameterization, then basically there's like a slight priority given to the RFQ winner for the first, maybe few blocks.
Mm-hmm.
So what it looks like is like I sign my order. If I'm doing, a transaction with an RFQ, I ask, the best quote. I sign an order that says this person can fill at their quote. Anyone can fill. If they have real price improvement, they can fill and they can come in before them. But there's like some margin of price improvement that they have to offer.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't offer like one way higher.
Right.
It's like you have to offer like, maybe 0.5% higher,
right.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still a public auction component where someone can come in with price improvement and outcompete the RFQ winner, which is important. But there is like for a few blocks, a slight priority given to RFQ winner, which allows you to basically get, very efficient, very fast price discovery.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, maybe most transactions that fill through that include the RFQ can execute maybe in like, 1 to 2 blocks, as opposed to if you weren't using the RFQ, maybe it would take like, 5 to 10 blocks or something like that.
With this model, decreasing price auction, which is a Dutch auction, which has existed from the 1700s, which is why we know it's really like a primitive.
Do you know where it comes from?
The Dutch?
Yes, but it's from tulip auctions.
Dutch, I'm like, was it the tulips?
Yeah, it was the tulips.
It was the tulips.
it was flower auctions.
Uh-huh. We'll put a pin in that one. First tulips, now dogs. You have the option of extending the time and or slowing down the decreasing price for a very long time.
Yeah.
Like, you could go up to 10 blocks or you could go up to 10 days for whoever wants to do that for whatever reason. What would be the advantage for extending that period of time? Like, why would someone do that?
Yeah, I'd say that, you can. So one thing is if you don't want to like depend on this RFQ system, or if the RFQ system is not like optimal for whatever reason for your trade, some people might just be comfortable part of it is like, there's sort of an assumption in what I'm saying that users need their transaction to execute in the same 1 to 2 blocks. And I think a lot of users, that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a reason that when we build things at Uniswap, we have to be able to consider what our users care about. And so having this like RFQ component allows it for users who want their trade to execute in like the next block. It allows that. But if users are like comfortable waiting like a minute or two, you might have there's definitely there's a lot of debates you could get into about whether or not it's like there's price improvement. It probably depends on like the size of the order.
Mm-hmm.
All right, if you're making like a large order, giving some people time to like source liquidity can optimize the price. So waiting a little bit longer, giving more time for it to propagate, more people to discover it, etc. There is risk that the price moves, like that the price moves against you during that time and not like, you know, this sort of like, so you are if you have an order that executes more slowly, there is risk that you are taking on like price risk that like maybe the trade will like go down, you know, the price will go down, not up for the token you're selling. And so it's not like strictly better, but it is, it does let you like remove the RFQ system. And it also, you know, I'd say that like, you know, waiting 1 to 2 minutes, like you're not really expecting too much price movement, and it might actually like optimize price a little bit. But I don't want to like, it's like such a kind of a interesting design and trade-off space that it's like, I'd also mention that, you know, one reason that might actually be is that like batching within the system, like if you have orders that execute slowly, maybe someone else makes an order in another direction within that time, and then it's more efficient to net against them. Something that like maybe all people ever know is like the story, not everyone, but most people know the story of like Carl and, you know, my first friend in the space, and he gets me into AMMs. I don't know if you know the second person I met, the first three people in order that I met in the space were Carl, then Phil Dian, then Dan Robinson.
Those are a pretty good lineup.
Good lineup. So the second person I met in the space was Phil, uh-huh. and, you know, the founder, you know, co-founder of Flashbots. Right. And like MEV, inventor of the term MEV, I believe. Mm-hmm.
Discoverer of MEV.
And, you know, released like the Flash Boys 2.0 right. paper. So we've been talking about this like design space since like well before. And like, you know, the first kind of version of Uniswap, right, is like, oh, I mean, like, yeah, like this leaks MEV kind of. I mean, we didn't have the word MEV yet, but he's, you know, right. And he sent me a paper by this guy, Eric Budish, uh-huh. Called like, it was something like frequent batch auctions, the something trading arms race, you know, frequent batch, like basically gets into like the whole like Flash Boys 2.0 and like mm-hmm. basically like postulates that like if time is continuous, like if you treat time as like a continuous thing, then like these like HFT games are like inevitable. That like there's always people, they're like front running is like inevitable if like time happens in order, right. And that like the only, and that like to like create fairer systems that don't favor like, you know, an arms race, you kind of have to like break time up into discrete intervals and do batching within those intervals. And so there's sort of like, you know, and definitely like there were like have been earlier attempts at it in Ethereum, but I think there's like often like UX issues around it. So I think what we're partially trying to do is like experiment with and explore this like this trade-off space of like, how do we like create fairer outcomes that don't have this maximize power in like the most sophisticated traders in the world purely. And I think part of that is like starting to like enable things to be executed in batch and starting to be like more aware of things like MEV. And so I don't even remember what question you asked at this point. I'm kind of just ranting, but
we were going through how the life cycle of a token, and then also just the time for why someone would extend out long period of blocks.
All that to say, like users have their preferences for like how their order. Like if someone really cares about executing their order immediately, they probably are going to get a slightly less optimized trade because they have to kind of like rely on like you can't very efficiently discover the auctions allow you to like efficiently discover the right price, but the slower if the auction is too fast, it's not very efficient. Right. You have to like know how to parameterize your auction, right. And you don't know how to and so the faster you need it to converge, like the less, in some ways, there's like less time for optimization. And so like having like, slower orders over time, like might just let you like get more optimal prices where you feel better about like there not being someone who's like extracting some value from your transaction. Mm-hmm. If you don't care and you just want your order to happen right now, and you know, like then like you're always gonna, then like things like, you know, we can do much, much better than today, but like, there's going to be some trade-off space of like if you want the instant fastest transaction, you might have to pay a little bit more in the long run than people who have slower transactions. Right.
What about MEV? How is MEV as a mechanism has Uniswap X stopped the leakage of MEV?
Yeah, I'd say that like not, you know, I don't want to use phrases like stop the leakage of MEV because there's like such a like, there's even like different ways of like thinking about it. Some people say like, oh, MEV exists no matter what. It's just like you've internalized it, or some people, or it's like gone to a different party. It existed. You just, you know, if you generally think about it as like, you know, someone wants to make a trade, you know, like that creates some value somewhere. And like, you know, like there's a lot of forms of MEV, right? People have talked about like sandwiching, front running, back running, you know, reordering transactions, reorgs. I don't even remember time banded attacks.
Okay, I'll rephrase the question.
I'll give an actual answer.
How has Uniswap X changed the way MEV is expressed?
Yeah. No, I think that like generally, what we're trying to do is have value that today leaks out to block builders and validators through MEV markets, mm-hmm. right? Right now, when someone makes a trade, like it is actually also broadcast publicly. It's like right now, basically, you know, someone makes a trade on Uniswap, like people are just like competing with each other, but they're not competing with each other to offer the best price to the Uniswap user. They're competing with each other to extract the most value mm-hmm. from the Uniswap user. Mm-hmm. That's what current MEV markets are, and that's what current like block building networks are. And what we're trying to say is, like, can we change how we encode transactions such that that competition, that rather than, like, a bunch of sophisticated people competing to, like, extract value from swappers, like, they're competing with each other and as much of that value as humanly possible. Like, some value will always have to go to Ethereum miners or validators. Some value will always go to, like, block builders. But, like, how do we just maximize the percentage of the MEV that goes back to the swapper because they're competing with each other, right? Like, if they're competing... Right now, they are competing with each other, but they're competing with each other to take all of the money. Now we want them to compete with each other to, like, have most of that value go back to the swapper. Mm-hmm. So it just has to do with how you like encode your transactions, and having like you know an auction is a way of doing that. Because if there you know today like a Uniswap order is like executing at like basically like a you know it says like I will make this trade as long as I get better than the minimum slippage my slippage tolerance. And what that means is like a validator can like front run the order up to the slippage tolerance and take that money for free mm-hmm. If you're mining a block.
Right.
And we don't want that. And so by having like a price decay over time, as soon as it's as soon as it's profitable for someone to include that transaction, they will. And so it, I guess one way to put it is that like today, like depending on the size of the trade, like it can be profitable to like front run up to your slippage tolerance. In this one, it doesn't go to the minimum price because it usually slippage tolerance is still expressed as like the minimum price of the auction, but the order is filled well before it hits your minimum price, and it can't hit your minimum price until the end of the auction, by which mm-hmm. time it's already been profitable. So the first moment it's profitable, that's when it's filled. Mm-hmm. And so you don't like just get like front run up to your slippage tolerance, which is kind of how it works.
Right. This is the beauty of the mechanism design of a Dutch auction, where just the mere system itself of making sure somebody fills that order at the first profitable opportunity is the MEV protection mechanism.
Yeah. I'd say that like also like, you know, so that's like the mechanism of protection. I'd say there's like other ways that like it's improved and like things like just the fact that like if you have a bunch of transactions at once that are off-chain orders, like one filler can like discover all of them and complete them all at the same time. Mm. And that means that like it can be it can be profitable to fill them all even earlier in their life cycle, because like someone might have an order and on its own it's not profitable for the filler to include it in a block or like a block builder. But like if you have another order that's going the other direction, then maybe you can. And so like when you think about that as like the earlier up you are, like the higher up you are in your Dutch auction, like it's a decaying price. The higher up you are, mm-hmm. the less value has been leaked. And so we're trying to like, you know, the more optimal, that we can like make these filler networks and the better we can parameterize these orders, like the less value will be leaked.
Okay. Are we ready for the bridge conversation?
Cross-chain
swapping?
Yes, cross-chain swapping.
How do I enter this conversation?
Yeah.
What's the point of entry here?
I can start. Basically, you know, when you have orders expressed as off-chain signatures, mm-hmm. we initially like started this project kind of thinking about what we might want to do in the aggregation space. And I think that what we discovered in the process is like if you express your orders as off-chain signatures, there are like other things you can do. And I think one thing we discovered is that you can actually do very efficient, very you know powerful, good UX cross-chain swapping. Mm-hmm. And you know, so instead of signing an order that says I want to swap this token for this token on Ethereum, you could sign an order that says I want to swap this token on Optimism for this token on Arbitrum, or this swapping across chains. And the sort of beauty of it is that from a swapper's perspective, the user experience is exactly the same. And even like the UX of like, you know, it actually can fill very quickly. And the you know, these fillers that are filling orders on Uniswap that, you know, we've already talked about, they actually can handle like the complexity and latency of using bridges, and figuring out settlement. And so you know, we basically think that like the cross-chain version of this is really powerful. I guess one way to put it is that maybe a few of the benefits that you might see is, one, it allows for like native asset swaps. So like right now, a lot of value currently lives in like, when people are doing like moving funds between chains and making trades across them, usually what you're doing is like you're bridging an asset, then you have a bridged representation of that asset on another chain, that is like sitting in a passive in like a liquidity pool. And then you're swapping in that liquidity. Like you might like bridge ETH to, maybe to be more concrete, like you might bridge ETH to Polygon and then swap your Polygon ETH to Matic tokens on Polygon. I guess they rebranded their token.
Soon, yeah.
Something like that.
With approval, yeah.
Something like that. But you know, in that world, you know, and you know, bridges are like, I mean, look, we've looked at this world of bridge. Like, we've had so many bridge hacks. Funds that passively sit in bridges are just like, you know, risk for the industry, more or less. And look, the more, you know, obviously, like, some bridges are much better than others. And, like, we've had, like, these L2 bridges have held up pretty well so far, for the most part. But what you could do with Uniswap X is you could just say, I'm going to swap ETH on mainnet for Matic on Polygon and, you know, a filler, basically, you know, should I talk to the life cycle, maybe? Maybe that would help.
Sure, yeah.
They're like, you know, so, like, a swapper might sign an order that says, like, I want to swap ETH on mainnet for Matic on Polygon, and a filler, and then it just like the previous, you know, version, like you have like this decaying price auction for how much, you know, Matic you need to fill to, you know, to get that the input ETH, and the order is actually completed on the input chain as well. So the filler, as soon as there's a price at which they're willing to fill, they like, you know, they initiated a transaction that like claims the order, and they transfers the user's input, you know, tokens into a kind of like an escrow contract, and they put up a little bond, and now, you know, they're basically responsible for sending you those tokens on the output chain, and so the next thing that the filler does is they send you those tokens on an output on the output chain, and you know, now the filler, from the swapper's perspective, they like have just like made a cross-chain swap, and then the filler basically has to like prove that they did that to claim the user's input tokens on the input chain, and if they don't do the proof, eventually it would go back to the swapper because they, you know, never proved that they filled. Now, how do you do a proof? You can, you know, use any like any possible bridge.
Right.
So that's one of the really cool things about it, is that like Uniswap X cross-chain variant basically can support any possible message, you know, bridge messaging or like any like cross-chain messaging protocol. Or even like any other system for how you settle these cross-chain orders, it's like kind of completely agnostic to that. But you know, we have some initial smart contracts, which I think will probably be going open source around the same time that basically allow you to that work for like the, you know, the Canonical, Optimism, Arbitrum, and Polygon bridges. But yeah, basically, like, you know, the filler has to proof through a bridge, or they could do it optimistically. Like, you know, one way to do it is like it's assumed the filler fills unless someone challenges it, and then it kicks off the force to do it through a bridge. It's like a similar design space to like optimistic rollups or something, where like, but that shouldn't happen in most cases, like because you have bonds to prevent that. But generally speaking, maybe I'm, you know, user signs off chain order, that is an auction, filler, you know. Initiates a transaction that puts their tokens onto the into the escrow contract, then fills in the output chain and does a proof. And that proof can be an optimistic proof, which means that like it's assumed that they do it unless it's proven that they don't. And then in that way, you have like very, you know, fast, good UX cross chain swaps. And like definitely, if you go to a challenge period, then it might be like if you challenge a swap where you need to prove it through like the, you know, the Optimism or Arbitrum bridges, which are 7 days, then you have a 7-day lockup period of the input assets. But that only happens if a filler lies and then they lose their bond, and so you have to like parameterize these bonds to be such that it's not incentive, it's, you know, not optimal to fade.
To carry this through with one of the themes I established at the beginning, which we talked about with all Uniswap V4 and 1 through 4, there's all these pools and all this complexity, and so this beautiful elegant mechanism of an off-chain signed order, an off-chain order. that doesn't just solve the complexity problem of pools. It also solves the complexity problem of bridges. And bridges and pools are kind of similar in that regard. And so since we are just signing these transactions, signing these messages, all of these off-chain orders that say, I have this token and I would like this other token on this other chain, all of that gets abstracted by the same service providers, the same fillers. And so they can manage the bridge complexity. They can manage the timing and the latency of that and just provide the swapper the thing that they want, which is the maximum number of tokens in the place that they want it.
Yeah.
And all of that complexity is just, once again, the whole theme of this seems to be left up to the free market, left up to the fillers.
Yeah, and there's like smart contracts on them, like the input chain that like enforce that the swapper actually gets what they wanted, right? Because you do have to choose like what is your source of truth for whether or not the order was filled. Mm-hmm. And that's specified in the order as it's being broadcast. And so, like, it's likely that, like, in our UI, once we have this live in our UI, like, you'll probably use, like, mostly canonical bridges. So, like, you know, for swaps between optimism and mainnet, maybe we'll use the optimism bridge. And, you know, you can use the optimistic pattern to make it so that, like, you know, you don't actually have to have 7-day, delays. And I'll also mention, like, one thing that's kind of cool is that it's not just for, like, you can think of it as, like, also, like, for, like, fast L2 exits, you can use this, right? Some people who are, you know, some people might be willing to, like, pay you. If you have, you know, ETH on mainnet and want ETH on Optimism, someone who's on Optimism who wants to exit might be willing to pay you a little bit to do that, right? And so you can use this for fast exits as well. I'd say that, like, definitely the, like, reduced amount of... One thing that's, like, a little bit different is from, like, most existing kind of, like, bridging protocols is most bridging protocols have passive exposure to bridge risk.
Passive exposure to bridge risk. What is that?
So, like, if... Basically, like, liquidity providers in them are, like... So, you hear about, like, bridge hacks. Like, basically, like, that, like...
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. Like, you hear about bridge hacks all the time. I think there was a $1 billion one, like, last week or something.
Last week?
I thought so. Maybe not.
I've been gone for 10 days. This is the first thing I've done in crypto in the last 10 days.
Well,
so,
you know.
I have some catching up to do.
Well, I don't know if we know how much. I think it was, like, minimum. I don't know. It was, like, anyway, we don't need to get into specific. Okay. But yeah, like, you know, bridge hacks are a thing. And it's because people are, like, they're holding, you deposit a token on one chain and it has and then at that point, the bridge is kind of like almost like a multi-sig holding all the those tokens, and they have representations of those tokens on other chains. Mm-hmm. And the sort of, like, risk, and for as long as those tokens live on the other chain in any form, and if you want to have, like, liquidity for people to, like, make trades, then, like, liquidity providers need to hold those, like, bridged representations of tokens on the other chains. Mm-hmm. And so, like, ETH on another chain is always going to be worse than ETH on mainnet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's maybe one exception, like USDC on any chain is probably, like, equally the same, which is kind of interesting. And that's why it's interesting that they have a bridge. And by the way, we did do an experiment that made it so that we could use the Circle USDC bridge as a settlement system for the cross-chain variant of Uniswap X. But that's sort of an aside. It again speaks to, like, you can, like, basically have, like, I think we're going to eventually have a world where, like, most assets live on the chain in which they were originated or, like, whatever chain that they're, like, most secure or is, like, most canonical for that asset. There might be some assets that are, like, on multiple chains, like things that are common stores of value and, like, you know, currencies. So, like, you know, top stable coins and maybe ETH and a few others. But, like, but generally speaking, like, allowing, you know, if you're a liquidity provider, just letting you kind of, like, hold most of your, like let's say that, like, you know, I want to fill and, like, I could have, like, some native tokens on each chain. And, like, if I want to fill an order, like, let's say I do a cross-chain swap from some random native asset to Optimism from mainnet. Like, even if you don't have, like, there might be AMMs on Optimism that are between, like, you know, the Optimism native tokens and other Optimism native tokens. And on mainnet, between mainnet and native tokens. And so, like, the filler, they can basically just, like, maybe they have, like, they're holding OP tokens on Optimism. They buy some other Optimism native token, fill your order on, and fill your order on Optimism. And then they, like, they just, like, receive ETH on mainnet. And they never at any moment in time had to have, like, they never had to hold, like, ETH wrapped on Optimism, or it just, like, reduces the amount of, like the size of these bridge honeypots and lets people just, like, swap between native assets.
Well, it seems to really minimize the use of bridges in the first place. Like, rather than have bridges being bridges for assets, bridges are simply just used to pass the final message, data, not assets, of approval that the bridge was actually the trade, the swap was actually executed appropriately.
Right.
And so it's one small use of a bridge to pass a small packet of data rather than having hosting long-term liquidity inside of these bridges.
And you don't even need that data packet unless the filler is lying.
Right.
Like if the filler like actually fills your order, you don't even need to pass that data.
Is it fair to call it minimum viable bridging?
Yeah, we're basically like trying to minimize the amount of like assets only live in bridges. You know, like there are assets like users are only exposed to bridge risk while transactions are in flight. Mm-hmm. Once like you know like the swapper has their like once the swapper has the output tokens and the filler has the input tokens, there's like no more bridge risk for either party. Mm-hmm. Unless those tokens are happen to be like wrapped bridged assets,
right.
But they don't need to be. So yeah, we're like minimizing the extent to which people need bridges. We're also kind of like abstracting them away a little bit, like. Mm-hmm. Like this system can kind of support any possible bridge. You could think of it as a bridge aggregator. It's important to like note that like the bridge used for settlement is like different from like fillers can use any bridge they want to like move liquidity around.
Mm-hmm.
They could use centralized exchanges, they could use bridges, whatever. But then like each trade does have a specific bridge we use the term settlement oracle.
Right.
Which can be any bridge. It could also technically be any other system. You could technically use like a multisig or a governance system, mm-hmm. or a single party if you wanted. If you wanted to, you could also trust the filler. If you like are like, I trust the filler, and then like you could trust them to be, and they could be the, and then you say anything that they say happen. Like technically, you could do whatever you want.
Right. You just need some system to say that yes, trade, that swap was fulfilled.
And this protocol is like completely agnostic to that system. It like can support any possible system. We have like. Initial smart contract designs that like work with like as I mentioned like the mainnet to the canonical L2 bridges for Optimism, Arbitrum, Polygon. We have a design that works with like the Circle bridge, but it can really work with all of the other every bridge you hear about in the space. Like theoretically, you could have like an adapter that could use that bridge, and then bridges are competing on like offering security and latency for like passing messages and not like. Having like billions of dollars of liquidity stored in them passively, which is like real, which is like a security risk. And we've seen how that plays out.
The theme of this whole thing seems to be harnessing complexity. And Uniswap X, the naming also, I think, is intuitive because we have Uniswaps 1 through 4, right? Which are AMMs. And again, Uniswap X is not an AMM. It is a order router, an order optimizer. And so we have all of this expressive liquidity protocols that we call AMMs, Uniswaps 1 through 4. And then we have this other expressive order fulfillment service called Uniswap X. It really kind of seems to be like a yin and a yang, like two sides of the same coin, where if you smash these things together, now you have Uniswap. That is Uniswap, right?
Right. Yeah, I'd say that like this is definitely like a moment, and it's not the first moment, but it is a moment where like Uniswap as an ecosystem can like step slightly beyond what it's done, and and kind of continue pushing into new territory. But like, definitely
new frontiers, please.
New frontiers. Yeah. I'd say that like definitely the end goal, right, is we want to create like decentralized markets, and we want today, right, people use decentralized markets because they are decentralized, but they don't. But there's like a trade-off, right? Like the user experience is still a little bit worse. Like they're still like it's still not as efficient. There's still not as much liquidity. It's still you kind of like people use it like despite the flaw. But we think that like in the long run, like decentralized markets can actually be like more powerful and stronger and like have better user experience and more efficient market structures. Right, like we speak to like even like when you think about like a markets based approach to something versus like a single company that's trying to like optimize for for you, right? Like moving into these models, we just think that like and using also like all these like new tricks that we've learned in blockchains and with crypto, new novel cryptography, and eventually we'll have like better ZK tech, and like that's going to be a part of the story. Like this is like a first step. That's a really important thing I want to get across. Like building, like we want to build like the ultimate kind of like decentralized kind of order flow, network. And there's like a broader industry around us that is also working on these problems. We want to do it like collaboratively, right? Like teams like like Flashbots, etc. Like there's like all these other teams that are also working towards like how do we like decentralize order flow? And this is like part of that story. But I think it's a really big moment for the industry because Uniswap is because like of how dominant Uniswap is from a in terms of like volume and users, right? Like something like probably like 30 plus percentage of all gas on Ethereum is Uniswap trades. And it's and I guarantee it's a higher percentage of MEV, right. Because you know Uniswap trades generate more MEV right. than transfers, and right. so it might, you know, and so like having, you know, like I think that like Uniswap, like us kind of stepping into the space, like and like is like really important for kind of helping push the industry forward, and also like having users and like being able to like learn from them and kind of optimize and improve, you know, for real people that are really transacting, like is like really. Useful and important, and you know, again, we're like really excited to do it collaboratively, and like, and you know, if these other kind of like models also end up working out, like things like Suave, like could like, you know, be directly tied into things like, you know, Uniswap X, like they're not like also automatically competitive. We're all kind of like working towards like decentralized order flow, generally.
Mm-hmm. So, what's the rollout plan for Uniswap X? How does it get started today, Monday the 17th?
Yeah, today, Monday the 17th.
It's actually Sunday, but yeah. For us, but for you guys, we're hearing this on Monday. What's the rollout plan? How does this actually launch?
Yeah, so today what we have is the you know, single chain mainnet variant is in like an early kind of opt-in beta stage, meaning that when you make a transaction, you know, when you go to the Uniswap web app, you can go into settings and you can turn it on. You can also just like make transactions. And if there's a transaction that, you know, the interface thinks you will get a better price, if you use Uniswap X, or if not a better price, like it's like, or and I think again, it's like this is like the first, like it's sort of like an early beta, and so it's like, you know, it will suggest it to you, and you can turn it on. Even once you've turned it on, it doesn't mean 100% of trades will route through it. It's actually going to be like probably a smaller percentage of trades, only like certain tokens, only certain you know, trade sizes, only certain pairs, only certain, you know, like it's this is again like the earliest beta rollout. We want to really like test the system before we, you know, roll it out to more user, to like a full user base, and for like, you know, all orders. And so, and you know, so you know, today what we have is a working system for the mainnet version, and the ability to opt in and have some percentage of your trades execute through it. When you do, you will see that your orders now no longer cost gas. There's some minor UX tweaks that show like this order that there's like no gas being paid. It will be a signature instead of a transaction. When the transaction is pending, you can't go to Etherscan because the transaction hash hasn't been created because it's just an off-chain signature. Mm-hmm. So there's like a few things. It's kind of like a slow rollout. We really like, you know, this is like a big moment and a big change in a complex protocol, and we want to like optimize parameterization. We want to give time for, you know, a competitive marketplace only exists once people join it.
Actually participate.
And so we have like some, you know, a little bit of work to onboard some initial kind of fillers as to help like test the system, but like we really want to give time for more people to onboard and interact before, you know, before it becomes like the full thing. Mm-hmm. And so this is like an early version. And now in terms of like the cross-chain variant, unclear. We have smart contracts right now, like stuff like parameterization, you know, how long it will take fillers to start to integrate cross-chain. They're still probably like, going to have to wrap their head around the single-chain variant, and that will take some time, as well as like the front-end considerations of cross-chain trading. There's like some other changes that probably need to be made to like let you swap, you know, between different chains, like in terms of how we handle network connection and other things. So we're starting to like work on improvements in our web app today that like make it more multi-chain native. If you look at our wallet is very like handles multi-chain very cleanly, and our web app is like not quite there. And so like as we're like optimizing the single chain variant, we're going to start like optimizing our web app to be better for multi-chain generally. And then, you know, hopefully like later this year, we have, you know, the cross-chain variant in our web app as well, and people will be able to make, you know, trades. But
what service providers or what other people infrastructure is needed in order to actually get this thing up and rolling? Like who do you need to hear from? Who do you need to get onboarded?
Yeah, I'd say that like you know, a lot of it already is like you know, swappers just need to use the web app as normal. Liquidity providers just need to create liquidity in the Uniswap protocol as normal. I'd say that like what's new is there are definitely fillers, and there's sort of, you know, initially like there's initially just like an API that broadcasts, you know, orders, and so integrating that and being able to like fill orders, you know, there's all these like people that do block building that can start tapping into that. Mm-hmm. So we need fillers to start discovering orders. Also, you know, for the RFQ variant, definitely there's a need of like people who provide quotes up front. Mm-hmm. That's about it. I'd say that like probably like wallets having like good UX around signature-based orders will help. Mm-hmm. They all have signatures, and like other sites have done like signature-based orders before. But the more like the wallets can be aware of like the UX implications of this, the better. You know, that's about, I'd say that like people can start like, you know, looking at the cross-chain smart contracts and thinking about how to build adapters for other bridges if they wanted, if devs want to get involved in that. Generally, like infrastructure around, you know, alternative, like, so a cool thing is that like when a user signs an order, they're incentivized to like broadcast that order as broadly as possible. They want as many fillers to discover that as possible. Similarly, if you're a filler, you want to discover as many orders as possible. Mm-hmm. And so having like redundancy at the like broadcasting layer, like, you know, like today we have mempools and whatever for Ethereum transactions, like having like alternate, like, you know, APIs for hosting signed orders, stuff like that could be helpful or interesting. I think over time there'll be like, it won't just be like one API for hosting these signed orders, right? And that's not the goal. So, you know, things that like help further the decentralization and I guess is also desired. But yeah, I don't know. It's a bunch of stuff.
That's a lot of surrounding infrastructure. Again, a lot of moving parts, a lot of complexity, but also protocols that harness complexity is kind of a core theme of not just the Uniswap in the last year or so, but really crypto at large, I would say. Hayden, it's been a crazy year for Uniswap in 2023. You got the mobile wallet, Uniswap V4, now Uniswap X. We're only halfway through the year. Are you going to be on again before the end of the year?
I think I'll be on. I'm expecting 2 to 3 more times.
In 2023?
Probably.
My God. What else is coming?
You know, we got some things lined up. I can show you privately after this podcast.
All right. Well, apparently, Bankless Nation, you can hold your breath because Hayden Adams will be back for more Uniswap releases. Just the absolute juggernaut in 2023. Hayden, thank you for being just such a strong bear market builder and really pushing the space forward.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, and you know, always love coming on Bankless. And yeah, we're trying to decentralize finance. So yeah.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. And we're doing it a little bit jet lagged at the very start of ECC. Yes. Both Hayden and I landed coming from the East Coast just a number of hours ago. So yeah. That's aping into ECC with the podcast. Hayden, thank you so much for joining me on Bankless today.
Thanks for having me on.
Cheers. Bankless Nation, you know the deal. Crypto is risky. DeFi is risky. Uniswap X is a brand new protocol. It's probably also risky too, just because all things are. You can lose what you put in. We are headed west, however. It's not for everyone, but we are glad you are with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.